You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Betty White has been serving up laughs and charming American audiences for something like seven decades as both a comic and serious actress, author, and game show host. She's been nominated for 20 Emmy Awards and awarded seven. And in 2010 was honored with a Lifetime Achievement Award by the Screen Actors Guild. She's called her latest book, her sixth, If You Ask Me, and of course you won't. It's published by Putnam, and I'm very pleased that it has brought her to our show today. Hi.
Well, hi. Thank you, Leonard. I appreciate that.
Now, you've been in show business for a really long time.
Before you were born.
Yeah. But when you were 17, you became a pioneer on television?
Well, my husband, my beloved Alan Ludden, used to say I was a pioneer in silent television.
Because they really didn't have sound at that point? Was it done? Well, television wound up being broadcast, the picture on FM and the sound on AM, which used to be the reason the sound was it, or the other way around anyway. But what was, do you know anything about what it was like when you did it in, what was it, 1939?
Yeah, well, I started in 39, and I did a show with a wonderful man, Al Jarvis. He was a disc jockey, and we were on for 5.5 hours a day, 6 days a week. And that's a lot of time to sit there and talk to each other without a script.
That was when you did a show called
Hollywood on Television,
and you replaced him. That was your first hosting.
Well, when he moved over to ABC, and I inherited the show because I was there, so I did it for about 4 years.
But so out of high school, you first did this television experiment, and then you went into radio. Did you always want to be in broadcasting?
I always liked working, and so wherever there was an opening. But I went into radio briefly with a morning show on animals, actually.
And you're still thinking about those animals today.
Is that
when you got involved with a Think About Animal Rights?
I'm not into animal rights. I'm into animal welfare.
Okay,
I'm not politically at all involved with them. I've been into animals since the womb. My mother and dad were the same way. And I've worked with the Los Angeles Zoo for 48 years, and I've worked with the Morris Animal Foundation, which is a health organization, for 49 years. We helped develop the feline leukemia vaccine and the parvovirus vaccine, and we do humane studies into specific health problems of dogs, cats, horses, and zoo and wildlife.
So you were establishing a career in broadcasting, and then World War II broke out.
Yeah, a little thing called the war came along, and that made me just forget about a career, and I did war work as we all did in those days.
But not in broadcasting, because there were jobs for people who had been in broadcasting and in film,
and they would fill those jobs. So I wound up, I think I had been driving for about 20 minutes after my license. And I was driving a truck up into the Hollywood Hills delivering toothpaste and shaving cream and stuff to the soldiers who were stationed up there.
Well, you grew up in Southern California, although you come from the Midwest?
I was born in Chicago, but I went out there when I was a year and a half old. Wow. I don't think California was a state yet. I think we were still a territory back in those days.
But it was already a major center for show business. So was it almost guaranteed that you would go into the business?
I wasn't interested in the business. I wanted to be either a zookeeper or a forest ranger. But I wrote the graduation play from grammar school. And, of course, I wrote myself into the lead. Why not? You know, so all of a sudden I got on stage, and it felt real good, and I was hooked.
Because you also get that audience response, and that's addictive.
That's right.
You say something funny, and people laugh. Or you say something scary, and they go, ooh.
Oh, it's lovely. But I was fascinated by television because you're only talking to two or three people at a time. If there are more than that in a room, they're talking to each other, not to you.
But so, you also, you had established a radio career as a radio actress, didn't you? You were on Blondie, The Great Gildersleeve.
This is
your FBI?
Yep, and I had maybe one line or maybe two lines, or I think my first job was I shouted Merry Christmas, and that was my line.
So you never were the one of the stars of any of those radio shows?
No.
Gildersleeve, did you at least get to speak to him?
Oh, yes. Yes, we worked together. And
he was one of the funniest people in the world.
Oh, wasn't he? Oh,
yeah. I wish more people were aware of that, those shows, because that show was just so brilliant.
And they're not, many, many people don't know who, you know, and I was so excited, needless to say. And we did two broadcasts in those days. We do one for the East Coast, and then with the time difference, we do another whole broadcast for the West Coast.
So were you here at that time?
No, I moved to Los Angeles when I was a year and a half.
And you were broadcasting from there, because most of the radio was coming from New York and Chicago.
And Chicago. But no, we did it from Hollywood.
And now you're in Cleveland, at least. On television.
On television, yes. Hot in Cleveland with three of the most wonderful gals again to work with. They're marvelous.
You want to tell us a bit about the plot of the show for people who don't have TV Land on their cable?
Yes. It's these three great gals. It's Valerie Bertinelli and Wendy Malick and Jane Leaves from Frasier. These gals decide to take a trip to Paris because nothing's happening. They live in Los Angeles. Nothing happens romantically there. So they're going to take themselves to Paris. But on the way, the plane has to make an emergency landing. So walking through the airport in Cleveland, they notice the guys are all eyeing them and looking at them and trying to talk to them. They say, well, why do we spend all that money to go to Paris when we're hot in Cleveland? So that's the name of the show.
And you wind up being the housekeeper.
They rented a house and unfortunately had to take me. I went along with the house. I had been the caretaker of the house. And they're not thrilled with having to have me, but we have fun together.
But this is another ensemble thing with women, like Golden Girls in a way. Do you like working under those circumstances where the laughs are spread out?
Oh, yes. And the writers do such a fantastic job. Of course, the Golden Girls writers and the Mary Tyler Moore writers. But the Golden Girls, like Hot in Cleveland, we're like 4 points on a compass. We each get plenty to do, but the characters are all so separated that one doesn't overlap the other.
Well, you had an incredible career before Golden Girls, and yet I suspect that an awful lot of people know you from that show, that was a kind of a breakthrough experience.
The Mary Tyler Moore Show was a breakthrough.
Right.
Yeah, when I played the neighborhood nymphomaniac, Sue Ann Nivens.
Well, but also she was the woman on television who did
do anything.
Home stuff.
The happy homemaker who could, she could cook anything, she could fix anything, she could mend anything. And Cloris Leachman played Phyllis, and she began to suspect her husband was having an affair with Sue Ann when he'd come home with his clothes cleaner than when he left home.
Are you domestic at all?
I go into the kitchen to feed the dog.
So that was not typecasting.
No.
But that also got you typecast as somebody who could be sugary sweet.
Sickeningly sweet was the term. And they were looking for somebody, the casting person. She suggested that I play the role. But Mary Tyler Moore and I were such friends and close friends, they said, oh, we can't do that because if it doesn't work out, it might make it awkward for Mary. So finally, Ethel Winant, the casting lady, said, well, why is it going to be? It's just a one-shot. Betty's been around enough. She's not going to blow it that badly. And so the first night, it was so exciting. After the show, Jim Brooks and Alan Burns, the creators of the show, came to me and said, don't go too far away. We've got a couple of other ideas for other scripts. So I had a recurring role, it was such fun.
And why do you think you have gotten those roles as somebody who's so sweet? Is it the dimples or?
Oh, people used to say, but she'll make your teeth fall out. She's just sickeningly sweet. I guess, and because I smile a lot, I don't mean to, but it seems to drive some people crazy.
Well, there's a kind of a Midwestern style, even though you only spent a year and a half of your life in the Midwest. Betty White has written a book called If You Ask Me, and of course you won't. It's published by Putnam. Can you explain the title?
This is my sixth book, and the second book that I wrote was sort of the same format, short pieces on how I feel about a variety of subjects. And so Putnam Publishers came to me and asked if I would do another one with the same format, and they wanted to call it Listen Up. Well, that's not a term I use ever. So I thought maybe if you ask me, and why not?
So you, at this point, six books, which would suggest that you like writing books.
I love writing. I love writing anything. I really do.
Well, a lot of actors wind up writing later in their careers because they're not getting roles. And it's harder for many people after they pass a certain age, women especially, to get roles. But that hasn't been a problem for you, has it?
Oh, I'm the luckiest person on this planet, Leonard. It's just incredible. I'm going to be 90 in January, and I'm still working.
And do you have any idea why? Because are you just the official person who we bring in who's over a certain age?
Well, probably the old broad, you know, the
bring in Betty White.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to go into a little break here, and we want to go out with a little bit of you as Rose.
Oh?
So you want to listen to that, and then we'll come back for more our discussion with Betty White, her book, If You Ask Me, and of course, You Won't, published by Putnam.
What I don't understand, why he sent you flowers at all. I mean, 2 days ago, you hated each other. And you know what else I don't understand? I don't understand how two people who go off to a business meeting end up in bed together. And you know what else I don't understand? I don't understand why you didn't tell him this morning exactly how you felt.
Is that it, Rose? I mean, are you finished, or is there something else that you don't understand?
Well, actually, there is. I don't understand how a thermos keeps things both hot and cold.
We're back with Betty White, who has written her sixth book. It's called If You Ask Me, and of course You Won't, published by Putnam. And you mentioned your late husband, Alan Ludden. You both had been game show hosts. Did you compare notes over dinner?
I only did one game show. I was the first female game show host, but Alan was one of the best. He was the host of Password, and that's how we met. I was a guest on Password, and it kind of took.
Well, I don't understand how you've been able to do all the different things, because your early career was kind of like somebody who could do anything on television. But then acting, you're one of the best deliverers of comic lines we know.
Have I got you fooled?
But how did that develop? Did you take acting lessons somewhere along the line?
Never had any acting lessons. I avoided them, as a matter of fact, because I was afraid it would make you stylized, you know, so that you would, because a lot of people who study acting get very theatrical, and I just wanted to be as natural as I could. So I tell you, Leonard, luck and blessings are the name of the game.
So you had no idea where your career was going to go
no,
when you started?
No, I still don't. No idea.
Well, and people just come to you? And I imagine you haven't auditioned for many, many years.
No, but once, for instance, David E. Kelly, there was a part very unlike me in Lake Placid, and I went in and read for it. I don't mind reading for a book. You don't know what your chemistry is with the other people, so why not read? But a lot of actors, I wouldn't read for a part for anything.
Well, I'm too important. I'm
that's
too big
right.
At this
that's
point.
Right.
They know what I can do. Well, you've worked in radio, live and taped television, film, although you haven't done any theater, have you?
Summer Stock. I did South Pacific, and I did 8 productions of The King and I, I love that because you have a beginning and an end of the run. Broadway, if you go on and it doesn't work, you're a failure, And if it does work, you're stuck forever. So,
but what about when you're doing a sitcom on television in front of a live audience? It's kind of like doing a play, isn't
it? It's like doing a play, the whole thing. And I just love that live audience. You get so much feedback from them.
The Saturday Night Live was a big surprise to a lot of people. You had the second largest audience after Ben Affleck.
Now,
do you see yourself as kindred spirits?
No, I just had a very good time. I was scared to death, but I had a very good time.
And why were you scared to death?
Oh, you start out with 40, 45 sketches, and I memorize everything or ad lib, and you can't do that with that many sketches. You have to use cue cards, and I never used cue cards, and I thought that was going to drive me crazy.
Do you do a lot of ad-libbing?
Oh, yeah. That's been my life.
Mm-hmm. Even though you've never done stand-up comedy, you obviously have a mind that moves in that direction.
Well, we started this wonderful disc jockey on the West Coast. We started Hot in Television 5.5 hours a day, 6 days a week with no script. So you just kind of wing it.
Was Al Jarvis really a talent?
He was a good disc jockey, and we started out to move his radio show to television where we would put on records.
And you were his sidekick.
Yeah, I was his sidekick, but we'd play records. Well, the first three days...
You played
days,
records on television?
That's what I mean. The first 3 days we kept getting all these calls. Forget the records. We want to hear what you're talking about. So it became a talk show.
Well, playing records on television does seem like a weird thing. Later, of course, with all of those teen shows, the performers came on and lip-synced.
Or the kids danced, but that wasn't us. We just talked.
On Saturday Night Live, hadn't you been asked to do host previously and turned it down?
3 times early on in my career because I was so Californian and it was so New York-oriented, I thought I wouldn't fit in at all. But this time I wanted to turn it down too, and my agent said, no, you've got to do it.
I'm not sure I understand that New York-California thing. Most of the people I know who are in Los Angeles come from New York.
Yeah, well, no, I didn't.
You worked in that society with those people.
Yeah, but there's a New York flavor that I just didn't have.
Well, we are going to play a little clip from your opening monologue on Saturday Night Live.
The campaign to get me to host Saturday Night Live, I didn't know what Facebook was. And now that I do know what it is, I have to say, it sounds like a huge waste of time. I would never say that people on it are losers, but that's only because I'm polite. People say, but Betty, Facebook is a great way to connect with old friends. Well, at my age, if I want to connect with old friends, I need a Ouija board. Needless to say, we didn't have Facebook when I was growing up. We had phone book, but you wouldn't waste an afternoon on it.
How much of that was just what they gave you?
Oh, much of it. Much of it, yes. But you can't help but sneak off book every once in a while.
Well, I have to tell you, 16 of my Facebook friends have already written in that they love this segment.
Oh, really? I love it.
We've got a lot of people writing in. A bunch of them wanted to share their favorite memories of your work. And Tonky in Red Hook, Brooklyn. I think it's Brooklyn. There are two Red Hooks. There's one somewhere upstate. Please tell Ms. White, thanks for making my alma mater, St. Olaf College, famous with her Golden Girls character. It's quite a fantastic school, but you are our main claim to fame.
No.
Were you surprised by the large gay following that the Golden Girls had and your popularity in the gay community?
I think the gay community seems to like old ladies. You know, they always have. And when we were on Live with Golden Girls, with Golden Girls, on Saturday night, they'd shut down the music, stop the dancing, watch the show, then turn the music and the dancing back on. We were very grateful, and they've been dear friends.
So you're not interested in Facebook? What do you write on? Do you write on a computer?
No, I don't own a computer. I'm really an old lady. I write longhand, and I can't think of a machine somehow.
And when do you find time to work? Because you seem to, to write because you seem to be working an awful
lot. That's it. And that deadline, it just keeps moving at you. And I didn't think I'd make the deadline. That's why I'm so thrilled that the book finally came out on time.
Have you ever thought about writing a book from another genre other than a memoir? Gypsy Rose Lee wrote a best-selling mystery.
Yep. I don't have time really for a creative work. I've done, as I say, 6 books. But fortunately, as long as I'm still working in these other mediums, there's no time. But I've got one more contracted for about the I've worked with the Los Angeles Zoo for 48 years, and our wonderful photographer has given me all these magnificent pictures all through the years, and I have these pictures, so I'm going to show Tad Motoyama's wonderful picture. But those animals in the picture, I've been with the zoo so long, are personal friends. So I will write an anecdote about not the species, but the individual animal in my memories.
So your love extends past the household pets.
Oh, anything with a leg on each corner.
Has living your whole life in the public eye been something you've been comfortable with? Because a lot of people complain about the paparazzi, about the lack of privacy. I had a friend who told me that she could not have a meal without somebody coming up to her and sticking a piece of paper in front of her autograph.
That's true. But, Leonard, if with all the benefits of this business, if you're going to complain about it, get into another line of endeavor. You know, think of the people around this planet that would sell their eye teeth to be doing what we're doing.
But you write that you particularly dislike red carpet events.
Oh, yeah.
Why?
Well, first of all, you can't see or hear. All the flash bulbs are going off of the photographers, and everybody's sticking a mic in front of you and yelling a question, so you can't see or hear. And I find it very uncomfortable.
Did you like going to those events when Alan was still alive?
No, neither one of us did. We would go because sometimes if you're promoting something, it goes with the territory. You have to do it.
My guest is Betty White. Her latest book, it must be wonderful to hear that. Her latest book.
Oh, it is.
is If You Ask Me, and of course you won't. It's published by Putnam. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Well, you've been nominated for so many awards. Do you have to prepare an acceptance speech each time you're nominated?
Oh, I don't prepare anything. I would think that would be a jinx. You know, you just go and it's such a lovely surprise. This is the cliche of the Western world, but I believe it thoroughly. It's the nomination that's the victory. I mean, the fact that you're suddenly listed with the top of your peers. That's the thrill. So then when they announce your name and you get the award, it's above and beyond.
So you're not one of those Vince Lombardi people?
No.
You've dropped hints of maintaining an active sex life, like in your Lifetime Achievement Award acceptance speech. Are you just being flirtatious, or is it important to let the world know that you've still got it?
I'm just bluffing. I'm lying through my teeth half the time of all the things I say. But you might as well, if you can't have a little fun with it, you know, it's no fun.
Well, you've never had children, and you're right that you're not a big believer in being able to do both, having a career and being a mother.
But I know a lot of girls do that very successfully. I know myself too well that I'm so compulsive, I would not do justice to both.
Because there are a number of people who've talked about achieving that balance. Michelle Obama, Meredith Vieira, Tina Fey.
Meryl Streep.
They've been able to pull it off. Meryl Streep wound up producing an actress who's going to be a pretty big star in her own right, Mamie.
Yes, but that's what... They know themselves well enough to know they can accomplish it. I know myself well enough to know I would feel guilt about neglecting the children every time I'd go to work.
Mm-hmm. So the career wound up taking precedence.
And I've never regretted it.
Do you think that the love of animals Well, that's, I hate to psychologize here, but animals instead of kids?
Well, I'm sure that was the case.
Mae West, who never had kids, used to have a pet monkey.
Oh, well, good for her. I just love animals. I love being around them. I love learning about them and studying them and getting knowledgeable about them.
Our next guest not had four kids of her own and then adopted five kids. So she's been a successful journalist. So
she feels about kids the way I feel about animals.
Well, if a listener asks, if you could be an animal, what would it be? I mean, other than a human.
I think a moose.
Really? Why a moose?
They live up in the high country, up on the base of those wonderful mountain lakes, and they don't see people. They live in the woods or by the lakes or on the grassy meadows. I would love that.
Do you think you ever lost a role because of your age?
Oh, I'm sure, but I wouldn't know about it. You know, those meetings take place, and you don't hear what they say. Oh, she's too old for this, or she's too old for that. I'm sure it must have happened.
Mm-hmm. But here you are, 89, still working.
Still having fun.
In fact, you've been working more years than some people, I don't know how to say this, people become retired after 65, many. You've been working 70...
I've been working about 65 years.
Yeah, that's incredible.
But my dad, again, was a workaholic. He loved his job. He was an executive at Krauss Heinz Company. And they had a mandatory 64-year-old retirement thing that you had to do. And, oh, he talked about all the things he was going to do and everything. You could tell he was bluffing. You knew he was trying to talk himself into it. He retired, and in 2 months he was gone.
Well, so I'm assuming you've never thought of retiring.
I never thought about it.
Golden Girls, if I remember correctly, weren't you offered the role that Rue McClanahan wound up having?
Yes, they wrote that with me in mind.
So what happened there?
Jay Sandrich had directed most of the Mary Tyler Moore shows prior to Golden Girls, and he directed our pilot. And Jay, bless him in his wisdom, said if Betty plays another neighborhood nymphomaniac, you know, they're going to think she's doing Sue Ann Nivens all over again. He said, why don't we make her, you know, give her Rose? Well, I didn't know who Rose was. I knew who Sue Ann was. But he, bless his heart, he said, she's totally naive. She's not dumb. She's terminally naive and believes everything and all the positives. Well, it gave me a wonderful framework for the character, and I loved Rose.
Well, it seemed radical at the time to have a group of single older women together and making up the cast of a show.
But it worked.
Yeah. Do you think that comedy has changed a lot since you started?
Of course, we've let the bars down so far, but I think it's the audience that's changed more than anything. Now they know, they've heard every joke, they know every storyline, they know where you're going with the first word out of your mouth. That's a hard audience to write for and to surprise.
Well, Dick Van Dyke was here the other day, and he said one of the things that saddens him is that when he was doing his show and when in the heyday of television and Mary Tyler Moore, you didn't have to tell a joke every 10 seconds. And everybody on the show didn't have to immediately deliver a one-liner that characters built, and so you could actually build for the bigger laugh. And the important part was developing the character.
Developing the character that hooks the audience, that gets the audience to care. I've been so blessed with the writers on Mary Tyler Moore and Golden Girls. But what they would do, they'd throw a situation in the middle of the table, and the audience knew each of our individual characters so well, the audience immediately would go to the characters to see how each one of us would react.
Ted Baxter,
that's good humor.
Ted Baxter would walk into a situation where we knew what he was thinking, and we'd be laughing before he ever said anything, and then he wouldn't say what we expected.
And
that would get another laugh, and then he'd finally deliver it what we did expect a little later,
laugh.
And then it got a bigger laugh.
And, you know, the strange part is Ted did not like that character. He did not like playing that character, and he was so wonderful. What I always loved about the character, he wore Kleenex tucked into his collar so people would know he was in show business.
Mm. To protect his shirt from the makeup.
Yeah, but that way everybody knows I'm in show business.
You know, it's been so much fun talking with you, Betty. Thank you so much for coming by.
Thank you, Leonard. Please know I appreciate it.
Betty White, she's written her sixth book, a memoir called If You Ask Me, and of course you won't, answers to a lot of the questions you may have about her, and we've talked about a fair number of them over the course of our little conversation. The book is published by Putnam. Thanks again.
Thank you with all my heart.